The News from Dublin by Colm Tobin. Read by Dervla Crotty and Dara Shannon.
The Journey to Galway. Read by Dervla Crotty. She remembered an unusual silence that morning. A stillness in the trees and in the farmyard, and a deadness in the house itself. No sounds from the kitchen, and no one moving up and down the stairs. But she wondered if the silence had been real or, instead, if it had been something she had merely imagined afterwards. She was unsure if getting the news had not actually changed her memory of the hours that came before. At times she thought that it hardly mattered, but at other times, especially when she woke to dawnlight and dawn birdsong, the details of how word of Robert's death came, and precisely what the period before was like, belonged to her life as much as her breath did, or her heartbeat. It came to her as a story that had been told and retold, rather than a brutal single fact, as though placing it in time and remembering how the news had spread would come to soften what had happened, ease it, edge it away. The details of her journey to Galway to tell Margaret, for example, and what she thought about on those two trains, or where she was sitting when the word came, and what went through her mind in the seconds before she saw the telegram. She lay in bed some mornings, living it all from moment to moment, knowing that she would go on doing this until she died, and that nothing she could do would make any difference. For her, there was a line between the time before she heard of her son's death and the time after. In the time before, she had wondered if bad news were to come, where she would be, what room she would be in, at what time of the day it would come. She had even pictured herself receiving the news, her own face in shock, her voice gasping, and every evening as she walked upstairs to bed, she had marked the day just ended as another one that had come and gone without news, and thus a day to be savoured, to be thankful for. These thoughts seemed as different from the thoughts of later, as land was from ocean, as air from water, as a death in a play in a theatre, from a real dead body lying in a pool of blood in the real street outside. When Robert had written letters, they had been read with care and attention. She knew that there was much he could not say, which meant that a stray phrase carried weight, perhaps even hidden meanings. But how much was often unclear, because his letters were written in haste. Perhaps he had intended his letters to mean nothing more than what they said. Yet it must be true, she thought, that unintended words give away something. But when he wrote, "I sometimes awake feeling as if some part of me was crying in another place," it hardly mattered whether he had meant to alarm her or not, whether he had meant or not to let her know how afraid he was, despite his efforts to be brave, and, as an airman in a war, how much daily fear he lived with, and how much he masked. The other place where he was crying, she thought, was here, where she was now, the house which he owned, which his father and grandfather had also lived in. If the crying was hidden, then it was hidden here and in the woods and fields around here. The thought almost satisfied her as she read the letter again and again. It struck her afterwards that what he did in those few years when he was a fighter pilot was merely an exaggerated version of what we all do as we live. We swagger. We are full of pretense that there is no real danger coming towards us. We talk as though the enemy is in flight or under control. As time moves, however, it drags us with it until the time for pretending ends and the body lies spent. When she saw him in London and later when he came home to cool, she noticed the swagger. She made sure that she gave no sign that she was watching all the time for a break in it, gave no sign that much of it might have been closer to bravado than bravery. He could hardly have put his fear on display